Hey guys, I'm Jameson Smallwood, and you are listening to an episode of Small Talk on the Culture and Conversations podcast. Small Talk episodes are bonus episodes where I have additional interviews and conversations that took place that you guys didn't hear in the main episode of Culture and Conversations. So this is excerpts of interviews that I did where I had conversations with people who called into my web stream that I did covering the midterm elections of 2018. I want you guys to hear some of their stories, hear some of their experiences, and just a little bit of extra loving from Culture and Conversations. I hope you guys enjoy these side conversations. And if you want to see these little web streams, then be sure to follow Culture and Conversations on Facebook. Thanks. Up next, Small Talk. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can. What's going on, Becky? How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. You are on the Culture and Conversations live stream for the midterm elections. How does that feel?
Awesome. Oh, I feel like a movie star.
Hey, you know, you are a movie star. You know that. don't be trying to sell yourself short. I reached out to you because I saw you posted like this really cool voter registration card that you had, that you found. How'd you let me ask you about that. Like, so how, what made you find that card?
Well, I started doing genealogy research probably about 5 or 6 years ago. Didn't know much about my roots. You know, I used to hear grandma say, "That's your cousin," and things of that nature and stuff like that. And I was like, okay, how am I going to find out how I'm related to these people? So I joined Ancestry.com about 5 or 6 years ago, knew who my great-grandparents were, and just went backwards. And from there, I found my great-great-grandfather, and which was Primus Rim, and I hooked up with a lot of my distant cousins and stuff because they were on Ancestry.com. And actually one of them is a historian.
Oh, wow.
And she had been to the National Archives.
Okay.
And we started sharing data, and because I had a lot of pictures and stuff like that. And she actually found his voter registration at Atlanta, the National Archives. And we just shared information and she gave it to me.
Oh, wow. So I've got it pulled up here, Becky, so people can see this actual card. So it says here on August, and it looks like it says 1867, and it says Primus Rim, and that name is a Southern Brooks County, Thomas County, Lyons County name. It has this great information about his voter registration. It says he was registered in the county of Thomas, and it says he personally appeared before me on the 17th day of August, 1867. And I mean, that's 2 years after slavery ended.
That's right.
That's incredible. Now, now I'm trying to see if he signed it. Did he sign it? Let's see here.
Well, if you look at the one under it, which was a Matson Jackson, it looked like the signatures were similar. So it looked like maybe somebody signed it for them.
I got you.
Because the writing just looks a little too close to me.
Yeah. I see it, because you're talking about right here where it says his first name, Primus Rims, and then down here at the bottom of the card it says basically looks like Maston Jackson. Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they were trying to get him. Whoever helped him get registered to vote by filling the card for him. You know.
Right.
Wow. That's amazing. I mean, that's real history there. That's like 18. Like I said, that's 1867. That's 2 years right after slavery ended. Now, what is he to you? You said this is your great great grandfather?
That's my great 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 grandfather.
So that's three generations removed.
Yes.
Oh man. Wow. Now, what side of the family is that coming in on, Becky? Is that coming in on?
That's my mother's father's great grandfather.
Wow.
Or grandfather.
Wow.
Yeah, my mother's father's grandfather. He used to call him Papa.
Oh.
Yeah, they used to call him Papa, and so yeah, that was my on my mother's side going up granddaddy's line.
Wow, wow, wow! Yeah, that's amazing. That's a real piece of history there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder why they archived his. I wonder why they archived his voter registration card.
All of them are.
Really?
Mm-hmm. All of them are back then are at the National History Archives in Atlanta and D.C. They're all scanned in there. If you know their name and they were registered to vote,
mm-hmm.
and you just do a general search, the National Archives have a lot of stuff in Atlanta and Washington, D.C. One of the things that, when you start searching for your genealogy records at the National Archives, it stops at certain points because it's kind of surreal because Black folks' records, slaves were considered agriculture, so you mm-hmm. have to actually go into the agriculture section.
Wow.
So we were considered livestock.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Once you get back to the slavery, yeah.
Wow. So they kept it classified as livestock even now?
Yes, it's still classified as livestock.
I'm just saying. That doesn't surprise me at least bit that they're still classifying people's voter registration and records and stuff as livestock in Georgia. So Becky, mm-hmm. How does this make you feel though, finding this voter registration card and being able to participate in elections? Like, how do you see your right to vote because of this information you have about your ancestry?
I don't think my great great grandfather was also. I live in Savannah, and he actually was sold at the slave port. Savannah was a big slave port.
Yeah.
And he was sold at the slave port in Savannah. I've actually visited the place. And he went to Jacksonville, and he walked from Jacksonville to Brooks County.
Wow.
And who, Piney Sheffield was the guy who bought my great-great-grandfather.
Wow.
Piney Sheffield. And he was in his baby producing ages, and he was my grandfather was a buck.
Yeah,
he was used. He was used to make babies.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that 2 years from the minute he had the ability to register,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that he was a slave, I feel very obligated. I feel it would be a disrespect to my great great grandfather. Being treated as livestock, having, you know, no rights and will, not to stand in the poll and cast a vote.
Yeah.
For me, it's the ultimate sign of ultimate sign for disrespect. I wouldn't be able in good conscience not to.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. You have a sense of your legacy. You have a sense of what that means for you and your family, you know, based on that mm-hmm. piece of history. And you're like, yeah, I don't want to disrespect that legacy because this is where I come from. And this is how hard it was for my ancestors to vote, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So what was your voting experience like today? Did you go vote today or did you do early voting?
No, in line about 45,
mm-hmm.
And I waited an hour and 20 minutes.
Wow. That's not too bad, especially for it to be the day of voting. It took me about an hour to go vote when I went and did what they call advanced voting. Advanced voting is when you vote closer to the election day, but it's not the actual election day. It's not the same period of time as quote-unquote early voting is, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is there any particular outcome that you're hoping for in this election, just out of curiosity?
Yes, I am definitely hoping that we get a balance in the Congress and Senate.
Okay.
I'm tired of people passing legislation just for the sake of party politics. We need some balance there.
Yeah.
And also voted for Ms. Abrams. Ms. Abrams, I feel she is the better candidate. I feel she's the most qualified candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that she would bring change to Georgia, and I believe Georgia needs a change.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Well, you have a wonderful evening, Becky, and I appreciate you being part of the Culture and Conversations live stream and being part of the conversation.
And I thank you for having me. Hello.
Hey, L'Oreal, this is Jameson. How's it going?
Hi, Jameson. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. You are on the Culture and Conversations midterm election coverage special. How do you feel about that?
Oh, wow, I feel pressure.
No, it's a governor's race going on, and you have been very vocal about your interest in this race. So my question to you is, how do things feel tonight from what you can tell from talking to people down in Tallahassee?
Well, I think things are moving in a positive direction. You know, I was able to go to the rally last night at FAMU, and a lot of us were really energized. We're looking forward to a new direction. We're hoping that Gillum can give us what we feel like we've been missing for the past few years under Scott. So we're just feeling really good about this. I know that some of the polls have been saying that Gillum has a slight lead over DeSantis, mm-hmm. but, you know, it was too soon to call earlier. So we're just trying to wait this thing out and see how it goes.
Yeah, we've been definitely following it. I've been giving an update on it every now and then. And like I was telling them on the live stream, the tip of the panhandle, Appalachicola.
Appalachicola.
Yeah, that's gonna tell the tale, because the polls don't close there until another hour, you know, basically 8 o'clock, because they're over in the central time zone. You know.
Right.
But you know, how do you feel about Gillum in terms of him? Because, you know, he's a FAMU rattler, he's an alumni, fellow alumni with you. And you know, does it feel like he has the chance that, you know, has a chance to win this? And, you know, how do you feel about that as an alumni of the same university?
I definitely feel like he has a chance to win this. I think he has a lot of support from our community. Mm-hmm. I think that he has a lot of support in general from different areas in the state of Florida. You know, he's from Miami. I think he moved to Gainesville, and he's kind of just been all over the place with regards to making contact with people and trying to get his name out there. So we're feeling pretty positive about this. We're, you know, we think that he's actually going to win. He does a lot for our community in terms of FAMU as well. So we're feeling very energetic and hopeful.
Yeah. I was laughing, L'Oreal, when DeSantis was trying to say that Tallahassee was an unsafe town. And I'm like, yeah, what major crime is going on down in Tallahassee that has people, you know, losing sleep at night?
You know? Exactly. I was pretty shocked about that as well. When he said that, I actually had to take a look at some of the statistics to see what's going on, because it didn't seem to mirror the city that he was speaking about. But shortly after, I did do a little research on that. You know, we had a little shooting on Friday, mm-hmm. where someone killed some women, unfortunately, and then he killed himself.
Oh, wow.
So, I don't, you know, that kind of made me wake up, but that kind of thing can happen anywhere. I think that overall Tallahassee is still safe. I think Gillum has done exactly what he can with regards to the crime here. You know, you name one place where one person can prevent crime from happening, and I'd love to go there.
Yeah, exactly. I, you know, I've never felt like I was unsafe in Tallahassee. And, you know, I've been in places around Metro Atlanta. I've been in some places back home where, I didn't feel like I was that safe, but never down in Tallahassee. It's a sleepy Southern town. And, in some ways, you know, so, you know, but I really hope, he pulls it out. Right now it's basically a tie. Right now, the results I've got from Politico.com says that he's up 50. Well, not him, but not Gilliam, but well, I'm looking at the wrong
thing.
Hold on, let me get my facts together here. Yeah, DeSantis is up right now by like a half a percent. It's basically a tie. And but see, that's where Apalachicola is starting to, their votes are starting to come in. And those are, you know, those counties are typically red counties, so.
Yeah, and it's too early to really call, so, you know, we just still have our fingers crossed and we're hopeful here. How's it going in Georgia? How's Abrams doing?
Well, L'Oreal, we are about to all get our plantation assignments probably tomorrow if these results hold up.
No.
Yeah, it's not looking good right now. You know, I feel, I don't know. I mean, it's still really early. The results are being to Abrams 35%.
Oh no.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, the thing that's a little bit shocking is that she's not getting the support I would expect to see her get around Atlanta Metro. But then again, it's still super early.
It is. It's still early.
The total precincts that have reported is only at 4%. So,
yeah,
you know, and then a lot of these are still, a lot of these other bigger counties still haven't turned in their results yet. So I'm expecting to see, see a little bit more.
Those here, numbers so. Increase. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, you know, I wonder, you know, if this is a good thing, we'll see, because, you know, we're 2 years into the Trump election or the Trump presidency.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of, you know, political power and surge behind the Republican ballot in 2016. So, you know, 2 years isn't that long of a time in a political cycle. So we may not be tired enough yet to vote for, you know, Democrats yet again. So we'll see how that goes, because Trump is still very much, you know, influencing people, you know.
He is. He really is. He's definitely influencing people, and he's doing that with a lot of untruth.
Yeah, that's the problem that I have, is that people are now, for instance, we had something happen on Facebook today where we were talking, some friends in a group chat, and basically one of my friends, they posted something saying that, hey, you know, this is what's going on at the Georgia election sites at the precincts. And somebody chimed in and they were like, well, I'm not sure about that. I got to fact check that. And I'm like, it's a video. Like, what are you fact checking? How are you going to fact check a video taking real time the day of? So,
exactly.
So yeah. But yeah, I'm going to let you go, L'Oreal. And I do appreciate you giving me some insight into what's going on down there in the Tallahassee vibe. So
you're welcome, and thanks for calling me, and I'll be definitely continuing to follow your stream to see what's going on.
Yeah, you did a wonderful job, so I appreciate you not being too nervous to be in on the Culture and Conversations live stream. So, and be sure to hit me up and let me know throughout the evening how things go.
Definitely. Thanks. Take care.
Hey, take care. Hello.
Hi, Jonathan.
Hey, Gloria, you're on Culture and Conversations.
Yeah, that's great. First of all, this is really sad. And I expected, I was, for Georgia, I was like against a runoff. And I was like, oh no, because if there's a runoff, then the Democrats lose, right? Because you can't get the same population of people back out to the polls in the same numbers.
Hey, twice.
So we know that the Republicans will go back out.
yeah.
So, you know, but now I would be fine with him having like 49-50% of it so that we could go at it again. But
yeah, it's been,
ultimately we know that that would turn into an L. So
it has been a rough night. I think people were expecting a more competitive, you know, and like I said, I don't know. I think me and you talked about that. And I was like, you remember those polls when everybody was like, oh yeah, Hillary's going to win and beat Trump. That's kind of what got us on that Trump discussion. It's the same thing I feel like happened with this. Like these polls, I just don't trust them when it comes to these candidates. I think there's a certain shame factor that people have, and they're not honest in the polls. And then when they go to the vote, they actually vote for the person they're going to vote for, you know?
Right. So. Well, kind of to your point. So we noticed when we were making calls today, for Francis Johnson's campaign, mm-hmm. that certain people would not tell us who they voted for. It's like, I don't discuss that. I did vote, but I won't discuss it.
Yeah.
And, it kind of reminds me of an old Dave Chappelle joke. I won't retell it, but if you're familiar with his work, you know what he said about folks talking about who they vote for.
And in particular, a certain group of people, you know.
Yeah, just won't have the discussion. We'll talk about everything else, but won't have that discussion in particular, right? But I am really, really surprised. And I don't know why. I guess I shouldn't be. That it's not a little bit closer, especially in District 12. Like, just as a resident here, I never see our current representative. And apparently he's in the district all the time, but obviously he's not in the district with like folks like me, right? Mm-hmm. And so he won't have any listening sessions. He doesn't have a very open approach to the constituents here. So I don't really know who he's meeting with. It's not me. And whoever he's meeting with, they went out to vote for him, or he has some type of good reputation with the folks that he is meeting, and that's kind of extended out to other voters. I don't know, because I never saw him, honestly, mm-hmm. until this debate that he did recently. It's probably about 2 weeks ago, maybe a week ago, and it was through a live stream. I couldn't have put him in a lineup and picked him out.
Wow.
I had no idea what he looked like.
Wow.
So anyway, so it's kind of, yeah, I'm surprised by that.
So,
and then, okay. Oh, go ahead.
Now I was going to ask you, what do you think got you so galvanized to ramp up your involvement in the process this election cycle?
Well, it's just, I think the rhetoric yep. is just, it's dangerous and it's gross. And I just can't deal with it. And to me, it needed to elevate a little higher in terms of my interaction with it.
Sure.
To beyond like, oh, I'm going to post some things on Facebook and like kind of talk to some of my close friends and try to get folks out to vote. Just through, I don't know, hitting folks up or just talking to my immediate circle. Mm-hmm. I felt like I needed to like for real get up and go call strangers and say, hey, we really, really, really need you to go out and vote. Because it is dangerous. We can directly tie Trump's rhetoric to murders at this point. And the thing is, it's so crazy because it feels like hyperbole when I say that, but it's not.
No, it's definitely
it's not. There are 11 Jewish people who are dead right now because Donald Trump winked at a conspiracy theory that involved a Jewish organization helping this caravan, which he insists on calling an invasion. I mean, it's so over the top now. And it's life or death for some people. And again, it feels like hyperbole me saying it's like, I feel uncomfortable saying this, but it's true. And so when you have anyone who is tying themselves to Donald Trump, I feel should not be in office. We need less of that in office. And we need people who will speak out against it. And so I think if this was just a run-of-the-mill Republican who was either not tying himself to Donald Trump or trying to separate himself from Trump or herself from Trump, I don't know that I would have gone out and tried to do anything today.
Yeah,
I don't think that I would have. But just in seeing over the nearly 2 years, it's worse than when he first got in office. It's just like, how outrageous can I be? And you just have this complete just separation from truth. I mean, you shared a story today, and I don't know if that person voted for Trump or not. I'm not really sure that it doesn't matter because I think the viewpoint that he expressed is across the board, no matter. So you have people that don't believe what they see because there are so many lies everywhere, and it doesn't matter.
Yep.
Verifiable truth is not important. And one thing I'll say too is that person is a believer, that person would say that he professes Christ and would say that there's a such thing as objective truth. So I even see people who understand that there is a such thing as objective truth and would sign on to that concept, really getting with this kind of your truth is your truth and my truth is my truth, and not really being able to put their finger on what's true and what's not, and not accepting evidence as evidence. So anyway, that's why I said, I was like, no, we don't need a runoff. But now I'm like I said, now I want to run off. But it's like, no, we don't need a runoff. This needs to be decisive. Yeah. Like, she needs 51%.
Yeah, I've always seen people, you know, be given over to conspiracies. But, you know, we would kind of laugh at that stuff. You know, conspiracy theories have always existed. They're nothing new under the sun. But no one was seriously trying to make public policy based on conspiracy theories. And nobody was going to the polls voting based on conspiracy theories and saying, you know, nobody was waking up saying that my life is in shambles because of some conspiracy theory. And, you know,
at least not in mass.
That's it, right? Not in mass. Like, you used to be the tinfoil hat person who would say those things. But, you know, now people have mixed the two together. They've mixed politics. They've mixed these conspiracy theories. They've mixed racism. They've mixed classism, you know, sexism. They've mixed all of these things together. You know, the whole almost sort of like the new, manifest destiny kind of mindset that it's about America. America has to be great again and all this stuff. Like, they've mixed all this toxic stuff together. And then they are now that people are surprised at what, you know, well, why did these shootings happen? And what kills me about it is that people get so quiet when you look at who did it and why they said they did it, or they go back and create some new conspiracy that, well, that shooting was just a Democrat effort to keep, to make President Trump look bad. I'm like, in what world do we go around trying to justify murders and call them conspiracy theories? In what world do we go around saying that, you know, somebody who lost their life, who was just worshiping their particular faith and in their particular faith, they lost their life, and now you're sitting around justifying it, talking about, oh, well, you know, it really wasn't President Trump's rhetoric. What it was that they're trying to be desperate for the midterm elections. You know, like it's just, and the thing is, it is just all fig leaves covering up the fact that people are, just people are just evil and wicked. That's where I come at it, you know, at it from. So, you know, I mean, that's a noble reason for getting motivated, you know. You know, I definitely was intending on voting this year. I went and voted. I definitely was going to sit this one out, and I wanted to make a statement that, I'm not endorsing that lifestyle and that mindset that's permeating. I told you that story about one of the fallen outs I've had with some people, and I just gave them smoke. I'm like, I'm not going to sit here and listen to this nonsense from you, you know, because you're sitting around reading some internet message board and thinking it's the gospel, you know.
QAnon.
Yeah.
But speaking about giving people smoke, now since you, that's a nice segue into this other, we just go rewind like 20 minutes, 30 minutes.
So you're going to segue my podcast? Okay. I see what you did there. With the clearing of the throat too.
You gave me a smooth transition though.
Okay.
I really, can we please, as Monique would say, can we please unpack this about the, you know, compromising because racism is a symptom of like scarcity, and if we just give more things then people would be like less racist. Is that what you're saying? Because that can't be what you're saying.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Saying, but we'll unpack it and I'm letting I'm gonna let you have at me. All right, so I'm not gonna dodge the smoke, so I'm gonna unpack it one statement at a time. All right. So I'm working with the fundamental definition that politics is the allocation of scarce resources among people.
We agree on that definition.
Cool. And I'm saying that one of the tools that people are using to allocate those resources for themselves is racism. I also talked about how we use misogyny or the patriarchy to do that, how we've used religion to do that, those same things, that all of these systems the isms, they're tied back to people using their privilege to scrape those resources into their pile, right? And what I said was, and I could, and like I said, we can definitely argue about if this is the best way to do it, but the logic mm-hmm. makes some sense. I think I'm saying that if that's what people have been doing and are doing and being told by the Republicans that they have to do in order to be prosperous, that the Democrats, they don't have to co-sign racism. They don't have to go and say that the racist is right, but they have to empathize with the fear that the racist is operating from when they look at their resource pile and they want more. That's what I said. So that now that's what I said, and I'm not going to say any more. Have at me.
Okay. So I'm not trying to have at you, but I do want to ask some questions about that, right?
Okay.
Because I think, and maybe we'll agree with this and maybe we won't, but we know that from the foundation of the creation of this wonderful nation that we live in,
yes,
that there's been a racial caste system.
Yes.
And that enslaved Africans and the descendants of enslaved Africans are on the bottom of that caste system.
Yes.
Can we agree with that?
I completely agree okay. with that.
And it's race-based. Can yes. we agree with that?
I agree with that.
Okay. So even the poorest person who is not a member of this subgroup that is on the bottom
mm-hmm.
is in a different and in maybe even elevated a better position than those who are on the bottom. So my question would be, what else can be given? Like, what other concessions should the people on the bottom grant the people on the top who possess most of the resources collectively?
Sure.
Not, you know, obviously, just as collectively. So I'm saying as a majority
mm-hmm.
possess most of the resources, and not just like, oh, a little bit more, like a whole lot more. Like
yeah.
if we look at land ownership, if we look at generational wealth, if we look at, yes, there have been increases in income, but we know that we haven't seen those increases in wealth. And a lot of that is, again, going back to generational issues, things that were race-based, government created and enforced, like actual legislation that disenfranchised us as the bottom of the racial caste system. Like, what do we have to give? Like, what other compromises should be made by the people who have been compromising the entire time they've been here? And I'm using compromising in the worst way. Like, it's not really compromise. It's
sure.
you gonna do this or you gonna die.
Okay.
So I'm saying, like, when I hear you say compromise, or we got to kind of figure out how to work around the rate, it's like, for what? Like, and how would we even do that? Like, collectively as a group, we don't even have the resources or the political power necessary to advance what you're talking about.
Okay, so I see what you're talking. I see why you got hot with me about this, right? When I say, I'm not talking about us giving them stuff. Right. I'm not talking about us taking money and resources and giving it to the racists to make the racists happy. That's not what I'm talking about.
What about ground? Okay. What about figurative ground? What ground do we even have to give? Like, literally, like, if there's an acre of land and I'm sitting over here living on 10 feet of it, 10 square feet of it, I got to give you the 10 square feet too, right?
No.
Like, can I live?
No. You see, that's the thing, right?
Okay.
I'm not saying that black people, DOS, descendants of slaves, have to give these racists anything. I didn't say that. What I said was that the Democratic Party has to build
right.
a platform that shows uh-huh. the racists that you can get money, you can get resources, and you don't have to do it at the expense of black folk. Is that going to appeal to
understanding? And I want to go ahead for anyone who's listening, with the understanding that we're not saying that there are no racists in the Democrat Party
exactly.
and that everyone in the Republican Party is racist. So I shouldn't have to say that. That should be a given.
That's good.
So
good.
I'll go ahead and fix that for both of us.
Yeah. No. That's cool. Assuming that the majority of the racist problem is on the other side, right? That's what I'm saying is that and the reason I said that, Glory, was I said that the Democrats have failed to empathize with the motivations behind the racism. Now, obviously, we may disagree with that about what are the motivations behind racism. But when I go back to using racism in politics, going back to my original definition of what politics is, the allocation of scarce resources, The reason that message that was deployed by Trump, the reason the rhetoric that's being used by him, is so that he can move people towards his agenda, because they think that if they align themselves with his racist agenda, they're going to get more stuff, like, or they're going to at least be able to keep what they've already amassed. And there are people like over in West Virginia, for instance, I'll give you an actual example of what I'm talking about. When Hillary went to West Virginia in 2015, 2016 or whatever, she basically told the coal miners that their way of life was coming to an end. That, hey, you guys are mining coal, but we're going to stop you from mining coal because that stuff is bad for the environment. All right. Mm-hmm. No doubt. You can argue about whether that's morally the stance you need to take from the environment standpoint. But what did Trump go and say? Trump went and said, hey, we're going to have clean coal, and we're going to put you guys to work, and we're going to bring back coal mining jobs. He empathized with what their pain was. Hillary went and said, you are the problem, and we're going to put you guys out of work for somebody else's agenda over in California who's hugging a tree, right? So what I'm saying is the racists are hearing all of this stuff encroaching upon their way of life. They're basic things like, hey, because the thing is, we think racism, I don't know if we think, I'm not saying you think this, but sometimes I think people think racists are living off in some other crazy world, right? Like they're in this ivory tower and they're looking down on the rest of black folk. Racists make the same money we make. Racists have the same jobs we have. Racists have to go to the same, not the same churches, but you know, they go to the same in some cases, right? The same churches. These people are side by side with us, and they feel literally like they are not getting what they need because of they feel like they don't have what they need. And then somebody's come along telling them the reason you got what you need is because that black person over there got your job, or that Asian person, or that immigrant.
So we should respond to delusion. So we should create government policies based on delusion.
But delusion,
because we know that that's not true, right?
I agree that that's
like,
not true.
And not only that, Trump made promises that Trump can't keep. Because we're nearly 2 years in, and Trump hasn't done anything for those coal miners, nothing substantive. He's going around saying, oh, we built 11, and this is not coal, but I'll put this in, and you can, you know, call foul if you want to on this. But, oh, we built 11 new steel mills or steel mills. No, you haven't. No, he just makes up these jobs whole cloth. We all know that he went to Carrier, made promises to Carrier that he was going to save their jobs from being outsourced. And here we are. And those jobs have pretty much been outsourced.
Yeah.
And so this is all based on delusion and listening to things that aren't true and not being able to see reality for what it is. And so it's like, oh, well, you know, you're not going to have these things because of those brown people over here. Okay. So I just don't see how that helps anything and when I say it, I mean, creating a compromise based on a faulty premise.
But what we're talking about is, repeat what you said. No, not repeat. I'm going to try to recap what you said. You said, should we make policy around delusion, right? Like, these people are delusional. So should we make policy to address their delusion? And I'm not saying we should make policy to address their delusion. We should make policy to actually address the pain that they're using delusion to try and solve. Like for instance, right? And this is my best analogy for it. Trump sold them snake oil. Trump said, hey, we're going to bring back your jobs. We're going to bring back manufacturing jobs. We're going to do all of this and we do all of that. Us in the IT department, in the IT world, we know that that's a lie because we're constantly working every day writing lines of code to try to eliminate jobs, you know. So with that mindset, you have to give these people an alternative to that. Like, how are you going to take a coal miner and give him a place in this new economy or her a place in this new economy? What is the actual thing you're going to do to help them feel like they don't have to align themselves with a racist in order to get their needs met? That's what I'm saying. Like, I think that's doable. That's not easy. It's not as easy as lying to people and telling them that we're going to bring your jobs back. Sure, it's not as easy as telling a lie, but that's where the empathy is. I'm talking about the empathy yet. I'm not saying, hey, you're right. You're kind of right about your racist views. I'm saying, no, you're right about wondering how you're going to feed your family when the coal mine closes. Now I got to figure out how to help you solve that problem. And that's what Trump did. Trump went there and said, we're going to help you solve the problem by blaming other people for taking your jobs and bringing back, you know, these jobs into America, these fictitious jobs. And Hillary said that we're going to replace you. That's what she said. So when the Democratic Party has to find a way to actually help those people solve their problems, if they have any hope of trying to connect with those people, the thing that they are the thing they're delusional about isn't real, but the delusion is real. And you have to deal with the delusion if you're going to deal with if you're going to deal with these people at all and getting them to vote. So.
And see, okay. And I know, folks, I know the people are here for the election coverage, but what I want to say this, and then, you know, I'll let you get back. But, and then of course, address it. Yeah. But I think where you and I will always miss one another on this is that we have different viewpoints, at least with racism in this context, of like the root of racism. And I hear you saying the root of racism is scarcity. And I'm saying, no, the root of racism is pride. And so scarcity is something that can be dealt with in a temporal way. We can just give you the things that you need, or we can create more access to these tangible kind of things that you need.
That's what you're saying.
And then with pride, that's a heart issue. I can't fix your heart. And so, and I know conservatives love to say this, that you can't legislate morality. Like, you can't make people feel a particular way about a particular people. And I believe that you can't.
Yeah.
And so we're going to miss one another on what the solution for that is every single time, because, and I think in the grand scheme of things, you think this is a heart issue too, but we're talking about it within the context of politics. Am I right on that or wrong on that?
No, I completely agree. I agree with you. I think it roots in pride. But I think political racism is exercised out of scarcity, if that makes sense.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know if Monique is still listening, but I want you to repeat this made-up term. Political racism, David said. Racism is racism.
No. Everything has a context. Everything has a context.
So racism within the context of politics. Okay.
Yes.
So
yes.
Racism, for me, no matter what context it's in, is rooted in pride. But you're saying that as you kind of, as we move from context to context, so like
you
the racism, just like the greater racism, and then like racism and its intersection with politics, you feel that it is rooted in scarcity.
I feel that people are racist in politics because they are trying to get more resources from them for themselves, because politics is inherently about the allocation of scarce resources.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, and they use racism as a political lever to pull to get themselves more stuff. Trump used it to funnel people into his agenda, and other people have used. And I gave examples of other stuff, like, you know, gender, religion. All these things are used that way. So, you know, people can disagree with me about that, but you know, I don't find I put it this way. The only time I run into racism is when I'm out here competing with people for resources. That's the only time I run into racism, is when I'm out here competing with people for resources.
See, you're making this conversation go on forever. Because let me tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
Because Buddy that was in here, and some of these things that we see that are race related, right?
Sure.
Buddy that was trying to get into his apartment, and old girl with the dog followed him around.
Mm-hmm.
That had nothing to do with scarcity. That was pure out, I'm prideful. I see a brown person. I believe this brown person doesn't belong here. Because how can a brown person live in the same space that I live in? Because I am this and they are that.
Mm.
Or the woman in Charlotte. I don't believe that these two brown women should be in this neighborhood because I make $125,000 a year.
Mm.
And I am this and I am that. And literally saying, like, they, when you listen to the 911 call, they don't belong here.
Mm-hmm.
That was not about scarcity.
Well,
there was plenty of space in that parking lot. She didn't have to walk past them.
Yeah.
And she had plenty of access to her own apartment, as they had access to theirs. It wasn't about what she couldn't have because they had it or because there was a limited resource. It was because of pride. She thinks she's better than them. So I can hear you say that in your space, in your experience, experience, which I don't want to discount.
Sure.
Right. And that you bump into it when people are trying to, you know, buy for space or jockey for position. But I'm saying that I think And I feel very comfortable saying that there are plenty of instances of racism
yes.
where it has nothing to do with scarcity. You have more than enough. You just don't want me to have it.
No. I can see that point. And I don't want to say, I really don't want to say the only time I run into racism is that. That's not exactly what I meant to say there. What I really want to say there is the only time I'm talking about, you know, I run into it in a political context is when I'm, or in my, okay. in my, you know, employment context, that kind of thing is when I'm trying to get more and somebody thinks that they should get more simply because, I'll put it this way, we both want more, but then they use, right. they use the tool of racism to get more than I have, right? They put me in a position, mm-hmm. oh, well, you're black, so then that disadvantages me when they can't disadvantage me based on my skills and my knowledge or whatever else we're competing over, right? And to your point, mm-hmm. I mean, you're right. So I don't want to say my anecdotal experience in this particular context, because that's not the one, that's not the context for everything racist. Mm-hmm. And two, mm-hmm. that's anecdotal. So I don't want to say that that disqualifies everybody else's experience with racism. But that's where I'm, that's the frame of reference I'm speaking from. And that's all I'm saying about, mm-hmm. that's all I was trying to say, politically speaking, is that it comes into the scarcity mindset that, hey, the reason that these people have this fear is because they think that they should have more. And you, mm-hmm. we call it, we do think is, I think it comes down to pride where I think I'm supposed to win every time. Like why, you know, who says that, right? That's pride. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. But the motivations of people being political animals is for power so they can control the resources. I really, that's my political theory mm-hmm. I work from. And those tools that they use or those levers, I should say, that they pull, mm-hmm. are mm-hmm. religious, their sexuality, there are, you know, for instance, like the topic of pro-choice, pro-life, all of these are levers that people are pulling to manipulate the system to get them, to give them more of what they want. And,
okay.
And, so I don't know. I mean, that was my take on it. That's why I didn't think it was that controversial.
I think I'm coming around to understanding that. Okay. Just in that last probably 15 seconds, I think I'm coming around to understanding what you're saying better.
Yeah. I think on some level, well, I don't want to say that right. Cause I don't know his heart like that, but Donald Trump is definitely using racist rhetoric. No doubt. We all talked about the coded language, sometimes the blatant things he said, but that is also the reason that he's using that isn't simply just because he believes it, but he knows that it's politically efficient. And I think, uh-huh. And that's what I'm saying is that racism for a lot of people in this country and a lot of people in the state is politically efficient. And in order for you to, in order for us to deal with that, we got to try to offer them something that is an alternative in terms of a platform. I'm not saying in agreement. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying in morally, you know, morally coming over to the dark side and jumping in bed with them. But we got to find a way to connect with these people in some way. If that's our path for trying to win, you know, for winning, because to your point, if we're going to create more voters by educating voters, by continuing to instill into people a certain particular ethic and value towards others, through ministry work, maybe through just civil engagement and all these different mm-hmm. things, right? Then, yeah, we can create more voters and possibly change it that way. But either way is a hard road, you know, because tonight we mm-hmm. don't, because tonight we see we don't have the votes. So.
Right. And so, and that's a beautiful segue. So I'll hop off the phone and let you get back to reporting these numbers.
Wait. You can't be out here just segueing my show like that, though. You can, but
I'm producing your show right now. Yes. I'm your producer.
Yeah. But no, seriously, I always try to, you know, I know sometimes I say things and, you know, especially when I'm in the middle of trying to think through it. I mean, you know how hard this is, right? To be in front of people, giving them your extemporaneous thoughts.
Well, you've been going for over 4 hours, so you were bound to say something that was going to catch you a little.
Yeah. But it was entertaining, though, right? At least it was entertaining. It got people moving and thinking.
Yeah, definitely.
So cool. So and I haven't even drinking. No water. You know what I mean? Nothing. No water, no wine, no coffee, no nothing. We getting at it.
I can't believe you didn't bring you up some bottles of water or something. That's crazy.
What I'm about to do is I'm about to put the splash screen showing these numbers. And I'm going to
run downstairs and get some water.
I'm going to run and get something to drink. There we go. I did promise to stay on the air until we have a winner, so I'm about that life. I got promises to keep. So, and plus, this is really exciting. I will say this, and I'll let you go, Gloria. Your uh-huh. enthusiasm, the enthusiasms of others this political season, has it definitely rubbed off on me. And, you know, so I got really engaged and really fired up to come in here and like stream. I got the cameras going or the camera going and the lights and stuff. So yeah, I'm really having a good time with this. So I really appreciate you. And I really appreciate your service too. You, I hear, you know, actually putting your feet to the ground, as they would say, and doing the work at the grassroots level, all the cliches, trying to affect change. Like, that's dope. Like, that's really inspiring.
Man, plenty of people did it. I only did it today, but I know there's been people that have been doing it since the problem.
But you're the only one I know. You're the only one I know. So
I think Jerika made some calls today.
No,
I think she was phone banging too.
I didn't know that. So maybe next
but
time.
But anyway,
maybe next time I'll do that myself. So we'll see. But anyway, glory be good.
All right.
Peace. We got a call coming in the Culture and Conversations podcast. Hello, you are on the Culture and Conversations podcast live stream of the midterm elections. Who is this?
Hey, this is Monique.
Monique, what's good?
I'm good.
I didn't recognize your energy because I didn't. My thing doesn't show the caller ID on my computer.
Wait, is there a delay? Because you're talking right now.
Yeah. You got to turn off of, you got to turn your live stream down so that you can, so that you can hear me.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. Let me do that. Okay. Hold on. I'm so like lost. Hold on. Let me put this on mute. Oh, okay.
Yeah. This is a real broadcast. Like, you know how you call into the radio station, they tell you to turn your thing down in the background? You got to do the same thing. Yeah, don't be trying to come up here with that half energy, thinking that I'm up here like just playing around, you know. So
no, I feel you. So can I go into what I have to say?
You sure can. The floor is yours.
Okay, so first I want to clarify that I wasn't plugging Vibrant Beauty. I was just trying to type in Vivian, and it just, you know. So I just wanted to clarify that. But I do want to go back to this whole notion of these local candidates getting gassed up, because for me, I was like, all right, I can understand why Stacey's on a national platform, right? Because she's trying to be the first Black woman governor, right? That yeah. makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Even Andrew, like the first Black male governor. It's also like Florida. We know Florida has so many issues when it comes to elections. But Beto,
yeah.
I was like, listen, we know Texas, and there was no way like he was about to take Texas. So the fact that they were gassing him up like that was just beyond ridiculous. But what got me was earlier today, a friend sends me a link to Beyonce's Instagram, and she had on a Beto hat. So I'm like, does she have like a fashion line? And then you saw Kelly Rowland was like posting too, and I'm just like, okay, like, this really doesn't make any sense, because that was at that time, it had to have been about like 1 o'clock my time, which would have made it like 11 o'clock Texas time. Uh-huh. So how do you think, and I do think that celebrities have some degree of influence, right? So whether they're raising awareness of issues, they're encouraging people to register to vote, get out to the polls. But at this point, it's 11 o'clock in Texas, right? And how much influence can someone truly have at 11 o'clock when the polls have already been open? People probably already cast their votes.
Yep.
You have weeks of early voting. What are you doing? So if you really wanted to influence this election and you really had Beto's back, why would you wait till the day of the election to endorse this man?
Because
why wouldn't you have done that like in the days and weeks like leading up to that? Like, I was like, sis, it's 11 o'clock and you're assuming that people in Texas like have their Instagram notifications turned on to see that you even posted. Like, who does that?
They cut the check late. That's what happened. That's what I think happened. You know what I'm saying? see, you get that late post energy when they get that late check energy coming at you.
That is true. Like, I have like heard of like stories where people have worked with celebrity talent and they are literally like, I need my check, or either you got to cash at me or Venmo me before they post. So.
Yeah. Yeah,
I guess Beto was late with them chats.
Yeah, Beto had to get that money together.
Like, what is this?
You know,
I was like, "What is this? This is literally the 11th hour." And then I'm like, "These hats, though, like I can't."
Yeah, LeBron.
Y'all knew he wasn't going to do nothing in Texas up against Ted Cruz. Like, it wasn't happening.
Yeah,
like it just wasn't.
Yeah, LeBron had a Beto hat on too. You know.
You know what?
Yeah.
This is a mess. This is some foolishness.
Yeah.
For real.
But, you know, I mean, maybe that hat energy is what was missing to get him elected, you know. And these are crappy hats, too. Yeah,
is that what he needed? He needed some hats. That's it. Hat energy.
And these are crappy hats too. And this, like the Beyonce, like
whose idea was this? Thought this was okay? And the campaign and be like, let's make some Beto hats and have celebrities wear them. This is some foolishness.
Okay, Monique. Okay, hypothetically. If you were a public relations professional, hypothetically, what would you have done to help Beto's image out in Texas?
I mean, it's Texas. There are so many things to overcome. I'm not saying that celebrity isn't like necessarily the way to go because it does have its benefits. I just don't think that using celebrities to wear hats is like the way to go. Like that is just, it's ridiculous. And it looks, I'm looking like, it's ridiculous. Like, come on. Like, that's like foolishness. I would rather you, if you want to use a celeb to endorse you, you want to use their influence. I get it, but you need to be strategic, one, about who the celebrity is, because at least with Beyonce, she does have ties to Texas, right? LeBron,
that makes sense.
I don't know what his ties are to Texas.
He doesn't have any ties to Texas.
That doesn't really make sense. Exactly. It doesn't really make any sense.
He plays in Texas he plays in Texas like twice a year. That's what his ties are.
This is foolishness. I mean, I can't. Like, I'm just, it's too much. And I was like, again, it's 11 o'clock, sis. The polls have been open, and they've been open for days, and now you're posting on like thinking that wearing this hat is going to get people to vote for Beto.
I'm going to send LeBron and Beyonce Culture and Conversations hat and see if that don't get me popping. That's my ad campaign. I'm going to get my dollars together and see if I can't get that post. You know what I mean?
But I feel like them wearing Culture and Conversations hat would actually have more of an impact for you than them wearing Beto hats would have an impact on him.
I believe so. I just don't know, man. Like, this is what I mean by being out of touch.
Let me look at these numbers because they gassed that man all the way up.
Yeah. I heard about Beto.
Think he thought he was going to win?
Nah. I didn't think he was going to win. I just thought the people were telling me that he was supposed to win. But okay, go ahead.
You think he thought he was going to win?
Oh, yeah, he thought he was going to win. You know, Beto out here, that Beto swag is real. That Beto energy, that was real for him.
That Beto energy.
You got to keep that Beto energy consistent. Like Beyonce out here biting her bottom lip, throwing up the rocker sign and all this stuff. It's like, I don't get any of this message.
So here's the thing. I'm looking at the political numbers and, you know, it wasn't like he was far off. It was like maybe a difference of like 200,000 votes. So perhaps Beyonce should have posted a day earlier and that could have gotten those 200,000 votes.
No, we can't.
Because that's the problem.
We are not going to blame the Beehive. What we're going to blame is Beto with them late checks. Beto's fundraising was off.
It seems very close. Like, it's a difference of 200,000 votes, which is literally, I mean, that's the size of, typically the amount of people that come to her concert, and she did several shows in Houston. Yeah. So why wasn't she plugging Beto then? He should have come out to one of her shows.
See,
that's what he should have done.
As a professional, as a PR professional, I'm just saying, hypothetically, as a PR professional that you may or may not be, I'm sure you understand that there are tiers to this. There's levels to this marketing. So Beto got that 12th hour marketing. You know, he got that 12th hour marketing energy check that he sent out. And that's what Beyonce gave him. She gave him that love in the 12th hour, you know, or the 11th hour. You know, that's what I'm saying.
It was just too much. I mean, it was too little too late. She should have brought him out at one of her Houston shows, at least one of them, because she had several Houston shows. Should have did that. Could have did a post on him earlier. She should have posted, actually. Did she even post a picture with him? Because at least Kelly Kelly posted a picture with him in the pic.
Let me find this Kelly Rowland one, because I've been just typing in Beto and random celebrities, and you know, seeing who comes up. Let's see, Kelly Rowland.
Which it also makes me wonder, going to your point about checks, though, it does make me wonder about the, like, is it ethical, right, for celebrities to get paid to endorse candidates?
That's a great point.
Because let's say he paid her, because he would have to, because, you know, celebrities are out here charging lots of money for tweets and Instagram posts.
Yep.
And for someone like Beyonce, I could see her easily being like, listen, I want $10 million for, and I'll post in this Beto hat. And maybe for $20 million, I'll put you in the picture. I could totally see that happening.
I think that's very consistent energy. Cause see, what Kelly did was she didn't post her stuff in the Beto. Okay. She posted a picture of herself with Beto. And, you know, first off,
well, see, the thing about her though, Kelly's a little bit, she's much significantly less expensive. So perhaps Beto could afford the picture with Kelly. You know what I'm saying?
She got that backup singer energy going on.
You know what? I'm not even going to go there. What I'm saying is her Instagram rates are probably lower.
That said,
Beyonce's are much higher. So he's like, all right, well, I can afford to get the hat posed on Beyonce, and I can afford to get inside the picture with Kelly, versus the other option would have been just a picture with Beyonce. So he was trying to diversify. You see it.
Gloria,
he looks so awkward, too.
Yeah, Gloria said that said that Kelly only charged him $100 for that picture.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he had to get some sort of discount. That's why. He had to spread his situation. And then he probably had to pay LeBron like $1 million for that.
Yeah, LeBron was walking through the tunnel to some arena wearing the Beto hat. So,
here's my thing with LeBron. It's not even authentic. Like, what ties, what investment do you have in Houston? Like, yeah. Why are you invested in Houston that much that you want to put on a Beto hat?
Yeah, it's trendy, right? Like, a lot of that stuff is supposed to come off as, hey, Beto's trendy, so vote for me. It's supposed to connect with the younger generation or whatever, but. To me, I mean, to your point, it seems nonsensical, because when you look at it, yeah, how does LeBron connect to Houston in any way, you know?
Right. Like, I'm invested in Georgia for a few different reasons. Like, my parents, like, live there.
And you're
right?
From Georgia. And yeah, so, like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's important. And I'm also excited about the potential of a black woman being governor.
Yeah.
But for LeBron, like, he should have been trying to. Didn't a Democrat lose in Ohio? That's where he should have been, because that's where he's from, and he should have been trying to send that Beto energy over to Ohio.
That Beto energy. First off, what we gotta do is, I will say this about Kelly. Kelly is looking flawless in this picture. Her head her forehead is a little pronounced, but other than that, I can forget it, because Kelly's like,
whoa.
I'm just saying.
You don't need to talk about people's foreheads. That's really rude.
No,
you don't
no.
have to talk about their forehead.
Look, I'm just saying the picture looks like her hair is blown back from her forehead. You know what I mean? So, but she's still Beto.
You know what? I'm not going to engage in this Kelly Rowland slander whatsoever.
There's no slander there if she's Bay. You can't slander Bay. You know what I'm saying? But now,
I am curious. I wonder if we can look at his campaign records or something and see how much he paid for these celebrity endorsements, because he paid for them.
I have a feeling.
Like, he doesn't have that Obama energy where, you know, people just want to, like, campaign for him. He doesn't have that. Like, he has to buy this energy.
No. Yeah, he paid for the energy, Monique. Oh, wow.
He paid for the energy.
Now, what's funny is that Kelly posted Beyonce's picture that Beyonce posted on her feed. So Kelly, like, reposted Beyonce's picture. So that's
how that. And he paid for that. He paid for that. That's that retweet strategy, or that regram strategy. He paid for that.
That's that 2 for $20 regram energy. That's what it is.
Exactly. For the price of one.
So Kelly, Beyonce was like, we'll throw Kelly's timeline in for free. You know, how about that?
Started the That was those 11th hour negotiations. I'm telling you, they were going back and forth about it this morning. Oh. And his team was probably texting her all morning, talking about when you're going to post. So if she had posted yesterday, he might have texted. So this is really her fault.
Gloria.
It's both Kelly and Beyonce's fault.
And see, Gloria says that Beto got a tummy reveal hat and bottom half of her face for $100K.
Listen, yes, because he's trying to sell sex in this election. Figured, let me go ahead and get them to vote for me if I use Beyonce. Like, that's a weak strategy. Whoever came up with that in his campaign needs to be slapped.
But you know what, though? You know, that was a strategy for him. Like, in all seriousness, there were people talking about him, like these talk show hosts, talking about how hot he was, and like he was the hot rocker from back in the day who turned politician. Like, don't get me wrong, I think Obama had some sex appeal that he was using during his campaign, but it definitely didn't feel intentional. Like, they felt like they wrapped Beto up in that sexual energy trying to sell him to the people in Texas, you know?
That was part of the strategy, but I don't think people in Texas are interested in that sexy energy. What they're interested in is that wall energy. They want to know, are you going to help us build this wall? So, like, this wasn't going to work.
They're interested in that cement and that brick and mortar energy. That's what they're interested in.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
They're interested in that gun energy. How can I keep my gun?
That's it.
That's what they're interested in.
And see, then they got
Beto wasn't talking that right language.
No. And see, they got Andrew Gilliam up here too on Kelly Rowland's wall too, you know.
But see, I think this was random. People just love his energy. So she posted this, I believe, for free. Like, I don't think Andrew paid for that. Like, he wasn't about to have Destiny's Child as a part of his strategy. Like, that just wasn't.
But yes. I don't find, you know, I mean, I think every form of advertisement and influencer can be used if they want to pay for it. You know, I get it. But to your point, it just doesn't feel authentic. That's the whole thing about an influencer. It's nice when somebody, you know, connects with you as an influencer in an organic fashion, and it comes off to their followers like, hey, I really F with this guy, or I really F with this girl. But to be like, oh, we're going to just, you know, just put a picture of us up here. And the thing is too, they should have retook this picture multiple times too, because Beto's hand is blurry in this picture. You know, he got that right hand blurry energy going on in the picture, you know?
True. So. One thing I want to call out too, because no one has been talking about this man. Honestly, I didn't know his backstory, being a person of color. But Ben Jealous, why is anybody talking about him?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's just like everything else, man. Like, it's a narrative, and that's my thing about it. That's what I was trying to say too earlier about the Democrats. Like, I'm not saying, you know, the Democrat solution is to come over to the dark side and play with these evil people. I'm not saying that, but like, clearly they're out of touch. Like, if you think that a picture of Kelly Rowland and Beyonce and LeBron James is going to bring your candidate home over the hump, that ain't going to get it. And the thing is, for you to think that people don't know that you are paying for these placements, come on, man. You know, we know what that energy's about.
We do. I think most people do. But then you'd also be realized, like, I encounter dumb people all the time that they don't realize that even when a celeb will have ad or sponsored by, like, at the beginning of their post, they still don't realize it's paid for. So some people really don't know. So I'm sure there's somebody looking at that thinking, wow, Beyonce really loves Beto. Maybe I should vote for him. Not realizing, like, this is clearly a paid endorsement. When have you ever heard her talk about this man or see him?
That's true, right? Yeah, you're right.
Out with this man before.
That's true.
Never.
I'm not mad at him. Yeah, I'm not mad at him for trying, but like it just doesn't ring true, you know. So, but anyway, man, I what else did you call me about? You called me about something other than this Beto hat, though.
No, it was that, and you know, I feel like Gloria already did the segue, so I don't want to have to give you that direct and aggressive energy about that whole racism track that you want to, I'm gonna let that go because she channeled my thoughts. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to have to roast you over that, but
I am taking that under advisement. I will ponder that as I go into the wee hours of the night waiting on this result.
Yeah, but I do have one question for you so we're all clear.
Okay.
What is your show demographic
for culture?
Can you break that down for us?
I'm just taking anybody who will listen to my show. So I don't have I say this is truly what I say on the show. So, I say on the show, Monique, that this is a podcast by a black guy, but this is not a black podcast. I always say that, right?
Oh, why isn't it a black podcast? So, this is like OJ. Like, I'm not black, but I'm black.
No. I mean, there might be some truth to that. But no, seriously, though. But no.
That OJ energy?
Yeah. Not that OJ energy. Not that murdering my white wife energy. No. we reject that.
First of all, he was found not guilty. So let's not put that on him. let's be clear.
Let's not put that on OJ. Nah, man. I feel like my podcast is approachable for anybody who wants to listen to a good conversation between two usually smart individuals, or who want to hear a funny conversation about that split check energy. So if you want to hear any of that, then you should listen to my show. That's what I feel like, you know.
Okay, so. And just to clarify, we can talk about race on your show, though, because I had heard somewhere that you don't allow race to be discussed on the show, so I just want to be clear.
Oh, no. So, yeah, let me break that down. So, my Facebook stuff is all, like, it's like free-for-all, right? The stuff I put on the actual podcast feed that you listen to through iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast at, that's usually where I try to stay away from talk about politics, talks about religion, that kind of stuff. And it's not because I'm scared of it, right? It's just because I feel like if you want to hear me talk about that, there's other outlets that I have that you can listen to me talk about that on. So if you want to listen to Culture and Conversations to get away from that shit, then you can do that with Culture and Conversations. You can get away from it. So I'm not trying to force it down anybody's throat. So.
Okay. All right. Good answer.
But if my guests go there, then I'll go there with them. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not gonna tell my guests. I don't have that censorship energy where I'm like, no, you can't come there and talk about whatever with me, because I'm like, no, I'll go there with you. You know, I just don't intentionally sit down and say, oh, I'm gonna talk about, you know, the jail, the prison pipeline as it relates to black people today. Now, if I bring on a guest who works with, you know, at-risk youth, and we talk about the jail to prison pipeline, then yeah, that's fine. I'm cool with that, you know.
Okay, so it has to be contextual.
Yeah,
okay,
Yeah, I'm just not gonna go out there. I'm not gonna just start the fight over. I'm not gonna just be like, you know what, racism sucks, and you know, all white people are the devil. I'm not gonna do that. Like, I'm not. That just ain't my energy, right? Like, I don't have that devil energy going on. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not that guy. But if I talk about, like, my experience with racism, we'll go there, you know.
Okay, we just wanted to be clear, because I felt like there was some confusion, you know, earlier with just topics and who your demographic was. So I think that we're all on the same page now. So, we appreciate that insight.
There was something else, though, I was gonna make fun of. Oh, my goodness, man. Because you were talking about who's listening to my show. Oh, I can't think of it now, Monique. It was good, too. Oh, it was so good. It was just funny, you know, but anyway, do you have anything else for our listeners, Monique?
No, I think this is good. I'm just like literally just praying for Stacey, and I'm praying for a runoff in this Oakland mayor election. I hope the current mayor gets upset because it's time for her to go. I know I've only been here for a month, but I've already discerned she needs to go.
that upheaval energy, that's what you bring into the table.
Yes. Yeah. I'm like, because there are some radical, like, black women on the ballot, and I'm here for that energy here in Oakland, for real.
Yeah, what's the most important topics that you have on your political agenda for this political season? Like, what are the things that are important to Monique?
So there's a couple. So one is just the pervasive homelessness. It's a real serious issue.
Wait. You can't. I'm up here drinking wine that's made by my oppressor. Break that down when you say pervasive homelessness. That was a deep topic there, Monique. You know.
Right. It's in your face, right? Mm-hmm. And this is someone coming from like New York. The like all walks of life, but I mean, there's a homeless man, like, he's camped outside of my building. I see him every day. We say hello, we speak. Like, that's his life. He literally has he cooks outside. He has like a portable heating pad situation, cooking fry food and all that.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of the homelessness, and definitely like part of it is stemming from the cost of living. I mean, the cost to live like in the Bay Area is, it is beyond ridiculous. Like, I just can't even put my my head around it. I mean, it's way more expensive than New York. And so many people are being priced out. So many people are ending up homeless. And I mean, it's just a way of life. Like, I literally probably from my commute, just simply walking from my apartment to the BART station, then getting off BART and walking to my office, I'm going to walk, literally walk over, step over people sleeping on the street, on the sidewalk, at least probably 20 people.
Wow. Wow.
My commute home, my commute back. So that's definitely like, that's like that, that's an issue. And it's interesting because one of the things that's really interesting about Oakland, and I don't know how I feel about it, but everywhere I turn around, literally every apartment building, every house, every business, there is a Black Lives Matter sign, right?
Oh, wow.
And I'm really trying to, like, understand where this energy is coming from. Like, I can appreciate it, but then I have to question, do they really matter? Because if Black Lives Matter, then they all matter, including this Black homeless person that is outside your business asleep every day.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that if Black Lives Matter, then we need to show it, right, in every, like, form. So that, to me, is definitely super important, just in terms of the homelessness and making sure that housing is affordable for people. I mean, and you shouldn't have to be making $200,000 a year to have a roof over your head.
No, I agree with that. And I think that's where you have a breakdown in this whole idea of the free market. Because, you know, the reason they can price the houses that way is because they got that Google money, that you know, that Facebook money, whatever, you know, whatever, you have that Silicon Valley money out there. But to your point, you need to create places where people can live and actually afford to live out there. Like, you don't want to just simply displace people through gentrification just because you've got these high powered industries out there, you know.
Right. And that's the thing. You're right. It's sort of like what people will call the Whole Foods effect, right? Like, whenever Whole Foods moves into a neighborhood, the cost of living goes up, you know, whether it's the house price, the housing prices, or like the rents. And it's the same thing with Google and Facebook, because what happens is, so some people may be familiar, but like Google and Facebook and a few other tech companies, they have buses that take people to and from work. Mm-hmm. And they have these bus stops that are in front of certain apartment complexes. And so the more you have these bus stops in these certain areas, like, that increases like the rental prices, right? It increases the housing prices as well. So that's how people start getting pushed out. And, you know, because who can afford a, you know, a $4,000 a month apartment in San Francisco when you're a teacher making $70,000 a year? Like, that's just not even possible.
No, that's unrealistic. And it's unsustainable, you know. But you know, I mean, those are really tangible issues. I mean, you know, that's what the least of these is all about for me. When I think about it in terms of the Christian tradition and the Christian faith system, it's like, yeah, you got to take care of people. Like, people are real. Like, you know, ideals are one thing, right? But like, people, like you said, you're stepping over people to go to your job or go home. That's sad and disgusting. And it needs to be, something needs to happen with that, you know? So,
right. Now, with the other issue, definitely the issue of like minimum wage.
Okay.
Literally for the past, maybe it's been at least 5 weeks, but it probably has been going on longer, but I've only been here for 5 weeks, but you have quite a few hotel workers that are on strike.
Oh, wow.
Specifically here in San Francisco, and they're on strike for, against Marriott hotels, because they want, increased wages. And I think what was on the ballot was to increase the minimum wage to either $15 with health benefits or $20 without health benefits. Either way, like, there needs to be some sort of increase. But I would say that's something else too. It's just people, you know, it's bad enough when you can't afford to live here, but people can't even afford to simply live if you're not even, you know, getting $15, which is like, I mean, it's asinine the more you think about it. I remember my first job out of college, I was working at the mall, working at American Eagle, making $5.75 an hour, right? And I just can't imagine, like, how do people think people can sustain on that? I could barely pay my cell phone bill on that. I was living at home, right, without, like, really any, like, real bills. But I couldn't even pay my cell phone bill. making $5.75 an hour. My bill is $100 a month. It's just, it's really ridiculous.
Yeah. I remember working at Best Buy and, I was making $8.25 an hour working at Best Buy. So, I mean, I went through the same thing. I mean, and that's, yeah, I was just like, man, how am I supposed to live off of that? And I knew I was working next to people like adults, like real adults. I ain't talking about no 20 something adults. I'm talking about like people in their 30s and their 40s adults who were making like maybe the same thing I was making, like maybe a dollar more than me. It's, you know, it's ridiculous. How are you supposed to live off of that? You know?
Right.
So, but, yeah, thankfully I got that first, you know, I didn't even get my first real job until I moved to Atlanta, but that's a whole nother story for another day, you know. But how is the political scene out there in Oakland? Is it really organized or is it just pretty much like every other place, you know, in America?
I'm not sure. I'm definitely learning more each day. I don't necessarily have a feel for it. It was interesting to me, just to be really honest, is everywhere I have sort of been, I've seen a lot of businesses that have endorsed the current mayor. Her name is Libby. And admittedly, obviously, like, Oakland has undergone a lot of gentrification, but I still feel at its heart, it's still a very much like black city.
Yeah.
And so, you know, seeing this white woman as mayor was interesting because I really wanted to understand where that was coming from. Because again, it's Oakland. Like, it's just not something I expected to see. And I'm still doing my research on her. Doesn't matter because I didn't vote for her. But with that being said, though, I think she sort of rose to prominence of sorts because she's been so vocal against Donald Trump. And, yeah, obviously people love that sort of energy. But, you know, you need for people to be doing something else and just going back and forth with him. And so there's been a lot of, like, question in terms of her sort of antics with him, and then also just relative to some things that she was doing relative to, apparently she was, I mean, which sounds good on paper, she was like warning potential illegal immigrants about immigration raids, which, I mean, that sounds like, oh, well, she's really down for the cause.
Yeah.
But then she's also been accused of like staging those raids as well. So who knows? So that's why you got to do your research. I was like, wait a minute, this is a little bit off-putting. But there was just some other people. There was a woman who's like a civil rights attorney. There was another woman who she was endorsed by like Bobby Seale. And so those were things that I just couldn't necessarily ignore. And these are both two women that have been very prominent and very vocal with everything that's happened in terms of like violence in Oakland and like police violence against like black Americans. And that's something that, you know, I can't ignore. I do need people that are going to be super passionate about that and super radical and not be afraid to confront the people that need to be confronted in terms of like moving toward change.
So last question, Monique, as I prepare to let you go, you know, one of the things that I'm trying to get more woke on is how understanding how to be supportive of women. In all seriousness, I am. I'm trying to learn how to be more supportive of women and empower women and take my privilege as a man and use it to uplift women. From your perspective, what is it that you're looking for from men in positions of influence to help increase opportunity and access for women to be more successful and to be able to flourish in their different positions?
Interesting. So for starters, I need for you to tell me what you make and show me your pay stub. and that sounds like really, really radical. But the realities are, especially for black women, we make for every dollar that a man is making, or in particular, a white man, we are making 63 cents.
Yeah, I heard,
which is ridiculous.
I've heard 70, and like, yeah, but that's right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And so we have to work literally. I think the day for Black Women's Equal Pay Day is August like 7th. So I had to work all of 2017 and through August 7th of this year to earn what a man made in all of 2017.
Oh, wow.
So I think, I mean, obviously there are lots of issues, but I think that's just like one issue that women do encounter is pay inequity, right? And a lot of that comes from like not knowing and also not have people like that know either. So to be really honest, like I make a lot more money than my parents make, right? And so like they don't necessarily, they don't necessarily have the insight to be able to tell me what I should be asking for and how I should ask for and like what I should negotiate on, right?
Sure.
And then even beyond that, right, sometimes a lot of times we think very linear. I know I did in terms of salary, like, oh, I'm just looking for this salary. But it wasn't until I got my job at Lyft where I wasn't negotiating salary. I was also having to negotiate my equity in a company,
yep.
right? And then there are all these other things that you have to negotiate, whether it could be vacation days or sick days or work from home days, whatever it is. But I think as a man, being very honest, because I've had a number of like fellow professional Black women that have said like, that's what helped them was, you know, they were maybe working. I have a girlfriend who I think she said she was making, I don't know, like $70,000 a year, right?
Okay.
She found out the guy next to her doing the same thing, same experience, was making $90,000. Right. And yep. so without her having that insight, without him having been transparent, she wouldn't have known what to ask for when it came time for her raise, or she wouldn't have known what to ask for when it came to, you know, getting her next job. So, I mean, I mean, there's a lot more I could say, but like, that's definitely one is show me your W-2s. And also don't harass us at work. And I think that would go a long way.
This is true. You know, I mean, especially in technology too, these things should be very much sort of, technology in the technology field, we can benefit from a lot more transparency. You know what I mean? Like this whole idea that, I'm paying somebody more simply just because of experience and expertise or whatever. A lot of that is a little bit of room for what you're talking about, those kind of shenanigans, because everybody deals with right. that. But to your point, in any system where that's prevalent, the people who are seen as quote unquote the least of these, they're going to deal with it even worse. And women are definitely seen sometimes in technology and in the workforce in general as just being, oh, well, it's okay. She's paid. You know what I mean? But not paid like a man. So, yeah, I mean, that's real. That's real. So,
yeah, I need that same paycheck energy. That's what I need.
That same paycheck energy and that free from harassment energy. Yeah. So,
yeah, that's yeah. important, too.
And also that walk you home energy. That's it. You know.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or that no splitting checks energy. Men can't be like making way more than women and then want to split checks.
That's true, man. Like that split check energy, you know. I always, you know, for what it's worth, fellas out there listening to the Culture and Conversations midterm election stream special, you should always, man, pick up the check. You should always pick up the check. Even when she insists, you go ahead and pick up the check, bro. Like, don't worry about what people say. You know, it's going to feel better in the morning when you pick up the check. I promise. Just go ahead and pick it up, man. So, you know, but anyway, Monique, thank you for calling into the stream. And we're going to see what happens here with this election. Stacey is currently behind 52.9% to 46.1%.
So, yeah, let's get our prayer warriors out for Stacey.
That prayer warrior energy. Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
All right. Well, this was so fun. Talk to you later.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And thank you for supporting. Seriously, no jokes aside, no energy jokes and all this stuff aside. Thank you for supporting Culture and Conversations and giving me an opportunity to be a part of your listening experience. I really do appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks, Jameson. This was good.
All right, Monique. Be good.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to this episode of Small Talk. Hope you guys enjoyed that. If you would like to reach out to the show, you can do so on Facebook. Culture and Conversations is the Facebook page. Culture and Conversations is the Instagram page. And if you want to send an email to the show, cultureandconversations@gmail.com. I love to hear from you guys and just hear more about what you think about the show and where you want to see the show go, especially going into 2018. Until next time, guys. Hope you enjoyed that episode of Small Talk. Be good.